curse.
Lothar, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm well. I've got to tell you, before we talk about this excellent movie that you've chosen to discuss, there are very few opportunities for me to mention this that are as appropriate as right now. I had my first kiss at a Gwar concert.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Wow. That must have been dramatic. What did you kiss?
It was a female friend. This was at the Howard Johnson's Hotel in a ballroom. I believe Gwar would have been touring on the first album. So we are Gwar. We will eat your car.
Yeah. What city was it in?
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Howard Johnson's in Indianapolis, Indiana. That sounds like a time period when I might have been contemplating suicide.
Possible.
I remember we had a great manager back then, Stinky Levine, Bill Levine. He was from Indianapolis.
Yes, of course. Yeah, Bill Levine was a legend in the local Indianapolis scene, and of course the association with Sleazy P. Martini and Bill Levine was a thing of legend.
Yes, any manager that has an 8x10 of them in a junkyard with some girl holding this gigantic dong, you know, she did. First class individual.
Indeed. Yeah, when you think of Bill Levine, you think class. That's for sure. Yeah, we had Bill Levine, Marvin P. Goldstein. There were various characters that would put on shows in backyards and basements and Howard Johnson's ballrooms.
You were a regular old Indianapolis punk rocker then.
I was indeed. I've been in California for about 20 years, but born and raised in the land of Axl Rose and David Letterman.
Right.
Indeed. So Indianapolis being not that far from the post-apocalyptic near future wasteland of Detroit, Michigan.
That's right.
Yeah, let's talk about RoboCop. I was very, very thrilled to see that was your movie selection. When and how and where did you first encounter this fantastic piece of American cinema?
RoboCop is sort of, it was a very huge movie in the pantheon and development of Gwar, right? I think that the first time I saw this movie, it was in an empty movie theater and I was tripping on LSD. and the movie theater, Sleazy P. Martini at the time, had a side gig as a projectionist at the movie theater. We went in there with dates at the end of an LSD trip and watched RoboCop alone in this big old sort of art theater. And it made quite an impression. It was one of those sort of second run movies. And I remember that, you know, I didn't watch RoboCop when it came out because part of the brilliance of that movie is the way that it was marketed. And, it was marketed as sort of just another dumb action film, like all of the action films that were sort of being released at around that time. So I was like, oh yeah, this is just, you know, this is not something that I'm going to want to see. And then when you actually went to see the film, it was sort of a modern day Frankenstein that was just, you know, filled with meaning and just a wonderful movie that showed a very grim picture of the American future.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that's a great that's a great thing to point out that I haven't thought about in ages, which is the way the film was marketed when it was released. I think I had a similar attitude towards yours because it was such an action heavy, you know, Rambo, Iron Eagle, even Terminator, you know, a lot of movies that were, you know, it looked like it was just going to be, oh, here's another cold-blooded agent of law enforcement walking around shooting bad guys, which has its appeal, but
I didn't have Terminator hopes for it, you know what I mean, like looking at those ads, And then I guess Verhoeven would later do something kind of similar with Showgirls. I mean, just the way, just that sort of the way that, that it was advertised.
Yeah.
It did not look like, it looked like, talk about being cynical about Americans. Like, it was just so lowest common denominator. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wasn't thinking I was going to walk into Terminator. I thought I was going to walk into, you know, something with a lot less depth and action, you know, maybe just a bunch of stupid action, but
yeah,
big surprise.
And I understand from what I've read about the movie as an adult that the Judge Dredd comic book was an influence on RoboCop, as yeah. was Blade Runner. Right. I would imagine those are things that you love as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Guar is built really on the, you know, we also have our own universe that we spin around in, and those are those worlds, those storylines, those narratives, those realities have been very important and figured very, very huge in the origins of Guar, right? Just a general interest in comic book culture and an interest in, I mean, Judge Dredd in particular is a big influence. What was the other one that you said was a, that was
a... Blade Runner?
Oh yeah, Blade Runner. Yes, of course, we love Blade Runner and you know, all of those the novels and stuff like that were things that we read and paid attention to. I remember being bitterly disappointed by Blade Runner, and then later thinking, oh, okay, well, this is a decent film.
I would imagine, you know, yeah, because a lot of the things that made me fall in love with Guar in the first place, back when that first record was out, were that, you know, I had grown up into horror and sci-fi and comic books and a lot of those similar reference points. And of course, I loved punk and metal. And so it was just sort of like, oh, this is a band designed for me. You know, there were us weirdos out there that were haunting the record shops and comic shops.
Oh yeah, that's us. That's
convergence.
That's what we were doing. Weirdos haunting comic shops and record shops. A very good description of a certain side of Guar.
Indeed, I love the Frankenstein comparison that you make. Let's talk about that a little bit more. You know, that idea of life and consciousness and technology and, you know, yeah, those big themes that movie's playing with that you wouldn't think a film called RoboCop would be venturing into.
No, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. And that's what made me love it so much is, you know, I mean, there's, it's also, I mean, it's just, in addition to being filled with just sort of the most gratuitous violence, like
yes.
at times in the film, which was, you know, certainly a reason to like it and a big surprise too. I mean, I remember, you know, that opening scene, you know, it's a take on, it's not exactly Frankenstein, you know, but it certainly has that element of, you know, bringing something, a sort of unwilling or at least partially unwilling sort of, you know, bringing this subjectivity into the world that might not have wanted to be there. Through technology and playing God and raising the dead, you know, all of those themes that are definitely in that movie. But in addition to that, you have a whole the horror of that opening scene where he is killed so terribly, and I just remember that, especially being in a theater. I mean, even, you know, RoboCop is a movie that we watch on the Guar bus every single tour. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, we watch that movie. It's always riding with us, and we always watch it. And it picks up meaning as it goes along. But I do love that aspect of it, and just sort of the elements of gothicism that he works in.
And, yeah.
You know, and those sorts of gothic tropes.
Yeah, that again, you wouldn't expect in what ostensibly appeared on the surface to be an 80s action film.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, and you scratch the surface and you've got this whole thing about, you know, a policeman. I mean, like, you know, the police element was huge in it, like, you know, and sort of but it was rife with anxiety about technology, which is just a sort of classic Gothic, Gothic trope, you know, and also, you know, the barrier between life and death, you know, and what carries over or might not carry over, the possibility of subjectivity living in machines, which is something that's actually, you know, it's a reality now. You know, the idea of transhumanism, like that, you know, that this movie was a, I think, an early example of that. Maybe not early. I'm sure that there's much earlier examples, but, you know, it's sort of a mainstream playing out of those themes, right?
Yeah.
Humanity being something more than what we are, but, you know, it's dangerous to be that thing, right? To be that mix of technology and humanity.
And there, and you know, when you hear people theorizing about in the not too distant future, the possibilities of having the capability to say for someone like yourself, where there's a lot of recorded interviews, performances, like there's stuff around of who you are and your persona and your identity, that that could all be collected and gathered after your physical body is gone and you could be recreated. You know, and like, would that thing be you? Would it think that it's you? Would it, you know, and I love tripping out about all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You can imagine how like that, like suddenly I think it becomes more meaningful. The LSD trip and the empty.
Indeed. And you know, what's interesting too about your initial feelings about it and then sitting down and seeing it and all the things that surprised you is that my understanding is that was the same experience that Verhoeven had himself, because he apparently turned the movie down multiple times and then had his wife read the script and tell him what she thought about it after they kept pushing it on him and pushing it on him. And then he had a very similar experience to where he actually finally reads it and goes, oh wait, this isn't what I thought it was at all. It's got all this stuff in it that I can play with. So I love doing, when talking about classic movies like this that I love looking at some of the almost castings. And apparently, before Peter Weller was cast, they looked at Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rutger Hauer.
Oh, wow.
Now, those are two very different movies than the one we got.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it definitely would have been. I don't think that you would have had, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of, I didn't recognize, you know, I liked that I didn't know that face.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Because it was just the face of RoboCop, you know, instead of, it's like when they talk about, you know, casting. You know, I remember when there was talk in the mid-2000s about Keanu Reeves and Josh Hartnett and Ashton Kutcher and all these people who were big at that time playing Superman. And it's like, you can't get the audience to put aside, oh, that's Keanu Reeves in a Superman costume flying across my screen. You know, like there's a certain stories that require new faces in that regard. And apparently Weller is a method actor and would only be addressed by his character name in RoboCop on the set. Hey,
that's interesting.
Yeah, the method stuff is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer, I think, could have been interesting. You know, one of my favorite little tidbits about him is when Anne Rice was doing the interviews with the vampire novels, speaking of life and death and Gothic stuff, she actually wrote a scene, so to speak, that takes place in the second or third book where one character sees Rutger Hauer on television and mistakes him for Lestat, you know, her main character throughout those books. So it was like there couldn't have been any more of a plain telegraphing of her saying, "Dear Hollywood, I would like Rutger Hauer to play this character in the eventual films."
Right.
And then by the time that those got made into movies, he was too old for the role.
Right.
But yeah, he has a certain look, a certain stature, a certain vibe that I think, you know, could have worked. But yeah, I agree with you. I think there's something about Weller's face and it being a new face for us and how identifiable his face is with that character.
And then also the face is so important in the film. Like, I mean, that's that, you know, more important than, I mean, and this idea of bodies, right? Like, the body becomes much less important. I mean, it's the one thing other than his subjectivity, which they bury behind a set of, you know, a kind of framework or network of objectives. You know, somewhere in there is that subjectivity, and the face is just the classic connection between subjectivity and the outside world.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense that they kept, and it's always been very striking to me, the scene where his face is just, that's all that's there, right? It's like, you know, when they show him without the visor, it's just just that face.
Right. Yeah, it's so
when you think about it, it's very impractical. Like, why would they keep the face? You know, like, go out of the way to preserve the face.
Yeah, yeah, and even if the idea was that it needed a face, it could really have been any face. It didn't have to be his.
Yeah,
exactly. It could just be, you know, generic cop face.
Yeah,
mustache.
Yeah, where's his mustache? Really?
Donut sprinkles.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the boardroom massacre if I'm going to have Blothar from Gwar on talking about RoboCop.
You know, if it's too loud over here, I'm going to move over here.
No worries.
It won't be too loud. The boardroom massacre, I remember it well.
I thought that you might.
Yes.
It reminds me a bit of that Howard Johnson's performance that I saw.
Yeah.
In terms of blood and gore. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very grim. Very grim scene. I love the layered bad guys too, right? Like, it's not just one bad guy. I mean, who's really the villain in this thing? You've got, you know, most movies have a hard time identifying one good solid villain. In this movie, you basically have three of them at least, right? And then you have henchmen. And so the board scene is really kind of where the this subplot of the two villains really comes out, right? You know, and you have the awesome death scene, and then the classic Harryhausen style animation that you're not going to find that anymore, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that instantly Amen. Reminds me of you know, Sinbad when that monster comes out.
Clash of the Titans or anything. Yeah.
And if you pay Kong. If you pay really close attention, like when he falls, you just hear pigs squealing, like they work, like it's like pigs are just going me 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 me. You know, because he falls, he can't go down steps. You know what a stupid.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, so great.
And the fact that there's a gun in the boardroom, it's like Like, is that just, was that common in executive boardrooms of the 80s? I've never been in one, maybe.
Yeah. I love the executive washroom too. That's the classic scene as well. The old and the young.
And another classic scene, of course, and perhaps one of the things RoboCop is most remembered for. A guy gets shot in the dick.
Shot in the dick.
That's not, you know, that's not like a common thing in a mainstream action movie, certainly.
Oh, I'm trying to remember who gets shot. When does this happen?
It's a guy that there's two guys that are trying to like mug and assault.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. That's right. Thank you for your cooperation. Like, that's.
Yeah, apparently that actor that gets shot in the dick went on to be on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Oh, wow.
And okay. This is a fact that I read, not a fact that I recognized.
Yeah, I mean, Clarence Boddicker definitely ruined that 70s show for me. I mean, I could never never watch it without thinking, can you fly, Bobby?
I did love when Peter Weller was on Sons of Anarchy, which he also directed a few of those episodes. But I liked that he was playing like an aging crooked cop because you could sort of fantasize that it was in the RoboCop universe.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe some iteration of the same character.
Exactly.
After he'd been spoiled. Yeah. That 70s show, Kurtwood Smith. Yeah. The Can You Fly? Yeah. What a.
So yeah. He's an actor that pops up and all over the place too. You see him. He generally plays exactly that kind of character, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, indeed.
Sweaty little ginger.
He is indeed. Sweaty little ginger. Yeah, what was I going to say? We were just talking about him. Oh, I know what I was thinking about. Back to the sort of gore and violence. Apparently, the original cut of RoboCop was rated X. This would be before NC-17 was even a thing.
I'd like
which was like the classier. Yeah. But yeah. That's crazy to think about a film getting an X rating for violence.
Right. Well, it was mostly violence that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hollywood's always been weirdly more tolerant of violence mm-hmm. than to X, which.
Always. And a fact that I just recently learned, recently as in this morning. I never read this before, but there is a post credit scene, one might say, Easter egg that is definitely unusual for the time, but apparently in the fine print, let me find it. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution by enforcement droids.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Yeah, it's just like snuck in the, I just read that today.
I should ask Saulborg about that. He would probably know. It's usually, if anybody in this in the rock band guar or associated with the rock band guar would know, it would be him. He pays very careful attention to that kind of thing. But I had no idea that was in there.
Cool. And it's very, I mean, it's snuck in the fine print, which is an amazing place to put it. I remember hearing, I don't know if it's an urban legend, but I remember hearing once that in the terms and conditions for iTunes that we all just blindly accept over and over.
Right.
That once upon a time, they hid somewhere in the middle, something to the effect of, if you're reading this, you know, email here, call here, whatever, you've just won $10,000. And apparently it was in there for years before, as the story goes, before someone actually
nobody ever
saw it, really and, did it and read it and collected right. it. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
The fine print. I mean, does Gore read the fine print?
You know, another thing I've always liked about RoboCop, and this is something that that has influenced some of Guar's filmmaking, is the commercials that they put in there. Like, you know, just the scenes of, you know, that I'd buy that for a dollar, and the SUX, the sucks 6,000 or whatever it is, 2,000. I also like the way that it doesn't, they look so, some of them look different than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
It was the kids are playing the nuclear war game. Like, that's good stuff, man.
Just near future. I love the near future films in general, where it's dystopian and it's, you know, even movies that don't necessarily necessitate it, like Predator 2. You know, it's like that's right. The cops have like kind of laser gun looking guns. It's like right. very few things are even tweaked. And it's like, does this need to be in the near future? But it's still, yeah. it adds a little something.
And RoboCop, I mean, like the idea of a privatized police force is not that far from a privatized jail system, which mm-hmm. we actually do have.
Indeed.
You know, so it's, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder how RoboCop plays right now in this particular cultural moment with police. I haven't really thought about that.
That's always interesting to me as well with different heroes and anti-heroes in particular, like how a lot of law enforcement guys love the Punisher and will wear the Punisher skull and whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's not really a pro-life law enforcement character. Like, that's a revenge driven serial killer.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Who's very damaged. I don't know if that's who I want cops championing.
I feel like RoboCop, though, is, in a way, pro-law enforcement, at least pro-the people of, mm-hmm. of law enforcement, you know, which, you know, it's police trying to work within a corrupt system to do the right thing, which I guess is another age-old sort of Hollywood trope.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's the system that's broken, but the individuals are trying to do something, you know, trying to still believe in the principles that are behind it.
And Gore, of course, had a sister project. What would we call it? That was
sister
with a cop connotation.
Oh yeah. We had ex cops.
Yeah.
A related band to Gore. Our buddies who were policemen, at which, by the way, it was a big favorite of police.
Wow.
Which is also kind of like the situation with the Punisher. Wouldn't say that ex-cops was a pro-cop statement. But you had Tub Tucker, the sheriff, the big Texas sheriff. It's amazing how easy it is to type cops like that too, right?
Yeah.
The big fat Texas sheriff that's you know, shooting his mouth off and carrying a six gun, and then you got the bike cop that's very much like the Reno 911 bike cop, and you know, the sweaty detective, you know, just all all of those tropes in there.
Yeah, so much fun. I wonder how RoboCop would fit into the ex-cops lineup.
Oh, well, we do have kind of a, I guess, Zipper Pig, who is a cross between the Gimp
from Pulp Fiction.
And like, you know, just, I don't know, something is seriously wrong with Zipper Pig. You know, and we have a comic that explains Zipper Pig's origins and all of that. You know, but he's a little bit of a sort of RoboCop-ish type character.
Yeah, I can see him existing in the RoboCop universe.
Right.
And that brings me to my last question as we approach the 30-minute mark. What would happen were Gore to land in the Detroit of RoboCop in that universe? How would Gore interact in that landscape policed by RoboCop?
It's interesting that you would ask that, because for the past decade or so, I suppose, I mean, every time Gore goes to Detroit, we always would play at this club, which is in a neighborhood that really reminds you of old Detroit, right? It's like...
St. Andrews Hall?
No, not St. Andrews Hall. That's upscale. That's near the casinos in Greektown. No, this is a place called Harpo's.
Oh, Harpo's. Okay. Yeah. I'm familiar. I've been to both. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a big, desolate, you know, it's the kind of place where you can buy, like, you know, you go to the Kentucky Fried Chicken across the street, and it's got, it looks like the inside of a bank, you know, with the in a bad neighborhood with the big heavy glass, and they're handing you your food out of a little portal.
Yeah.
And they try to sell you crack, like the people that work there are selling crack. The Colonel knows this. The Colonel would be very upset, I think. But you know, and you can't really walk around, like, even Gore can't walk around Harpo's. Like, there's no way we're gonna go out there.
And if you're playing Harpo's and you're not in a bus, you definitely don't want to leave all your stuff in the van.
No.
Bring those laptops inside, fellas.
Right. I mean, you don't even want to leave it in the bus. I mean, semi or whatever you've got parked out there. Grim. So, you know, I mean, I think Gore would fit in. We would probably be just what we always are, which is a force of chaos, right? Showing, you know, mutual, like disinterest in the sort of affairs of humans. But I think probably, you know, we would wind up defending RoboCop. It's like, you know, it's well, we're at the half hour mark, so I'll leave it there. But I feel like Wall would probably drop out of the sky and defend RoboCop just because it's so obvious. I mean, we certainly wouldn't like Ed 209.
No. Well, I will say quickly, because you mentioned the Colonel. Colonel Sanders almost sort of fits into bringing us full circle what we were talking about in the beginning and some of the themes of RoboCop, in that here's a guy who died on bad terms with the company. He started a Colonel's original place in Kentucky, and they sued him, and it's an whole thing. And he hated the way that they had changed the recipes and watered everything down. And now here we are in 2020, and Colonel Sanders is back in KFC commercials, as played by various people dressed as Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
RoboCop-ish in that sense.
It is very RoboCop-ish. Like, he's back alive, and he's not even alive, and they forced him to make peace. And it's really sketchy, too, you know, like a Kentucky colonel. He's a colonel, not a colonel in the Air Force. He's a, I don't know. I mean, they were always really referring to colonels, men who had been colonels or had some kind of high rank in the Confederate Army. Mm,
there's definitely that connotation. For sure. Yeah, and I got to say, I love Norm MacDonald, so no offense to him, because I think he was the colonel at one point. But but yeah, strange thing. Well, Blothar, thank you so much. I was very thrilled to make this happen, and especially when I said, you know, I want to let him pick the movie. What does he want to talk about? And RoboCop came back. I went, fuck yes.
Thank you.
So thank you so much.
All righty.
Hope to chat with you again sometime.
All right. Take it easy. Bye-bye.